So I do want to, I have a PowerPoint that I did in connection with two of my biggest projects of the past year or so. And that one of them was a new book that we brought out less than a year ago called Cancer Incorporated. And the other thing was a film that we made, Immunotherapy, The Battle Within. Both of those you can access through our website, mossreports.com. They're right up at the top. We've made the book, the PDF, the ebook version of it free for people viewing this this video. It's right there, so you can download the PDF of enter your email and download the PDF of Cancer Incorporated. And the film is also you can click on it there and gain access to the film. So we want to do this as a public service. Oh, there is also a printed version of the book, which is basically at our cost, which is $20 to print, and I guess the shipping is included. I haven't done it in a while. I'm not sure, but anyway, you can if you need and want a physical copy of the book, it's available. The film is about an hour in length. We're very proud of it. I wrote the script and I narrate the film. It's a documentary film, of course. And then the film was actually made by my grandson, Jacob Moss, and my son, Ben Moss, who lived through, of course, all of this that I described to you. He was the producer of the film. So it really was a three generation Moss Men production. And I think you'll be happily surprised at how professional this is, and how, well put together it is. Mossreports.com is the website. So you can get two of these really excellent products, I would say. So let me see if I can now call up the PowerPoint. All right, so this is the logo for the film, The Battle Within. As I say, it's available free to watch at mossreports.com, where you also find out about our books and a lot of other stuff, including the Moss reports that I've done over a period of many years. So I talked about the positive, what's positive within the field of nutritional medicine. The nutraceuticals, it's become much more clear now that these food-derived phytochemicals or nutraceuticals are very powerful. And I give some examples on the left there. And in particular, they are very important in terms of the cancer stem cells. You would often, if you bring this up with your standard oncologist, they'll tell you, "Oh, that's all well and good, but we believe in science, and we want to, we only go by evidence, evidence-based medicine. We only want to see scientific studies, and there's no scientific studies that prove the effectiveness of this." This is a complete misunderstanding, and I'm being kind by calling it a misunderstanding. There's a lot of research, and these numbers that I show here are from about a year ago. So the numbers have only increased. They're constantly being researched. It's just that not much of this research goes on at comprehensive cancer centers in the United States. So you have to go to PubMed, which is the US government database of 32 million journal articles, and you will find research. And as I show with curcumin, derivative of the turmeric, there's were at that point 5,864 publications that mention curcumin and cancer as search terms, and certainly among those are numerous articles on the effectiveness of curcumin in colorectal cancer and other kinds of cancer. And similarly, the soy derivatives, the isoflavones, highly researched topic, resveratrol, highly researched, and so forth. So you add that all up, that looks like about 15,000 journal articles on the topic. Not all of them are positive. Not all of those numbers are solely focused on those topics, but there are hundreds and probably thousands of articles that are positive about the impact of nutritional factors on cancer. Now, let's take the converse of that. And this is something that we talk about in the film. Yeah, I don't know if you can read this, but Goldman Sachs, the biggest investment company on Wall Street, I'd say, settled a massive corruption case for $2.8 billion with the U.S. government. So they're not entirely lily white, or whatever the phrase is, pure in their pure as the driven snow or something in terms of their reliability. But here's an interesting thing. This was an article that appeared, it's 3 years ago now, but I think it's still very relevant. Goldman Sachs asks in biotech research report, is curing patients a sustainable business model? Well, what's that about? That's a weird sentence. Well, it was a secret report. At least I couldn't get a copy of it. So we rely upon a business journalist who read the report. The report went out to their biggest investors, and here's what it says. And so it's not a conspiracy theory, because it was in Business Week, or one of the big publications, and nobody at Goldman has contested the accuracy of this. But I couldn't; they wouldn't send me a copy. So it said the potential to deliver one-shot cures is one of the most attractive aspects of gene therapy. Well, that sounds good. One-shot cure sounds pretty good. What's the catch? Here's what they follow this up with. That's their headquarters in New Jersey. While a true cure carries tremendous value for patients and society, it could represent a challenge for developers looking for sustained cash flow. Oh, now this is getting interesting. It's a challenge. Okay. A challenge to sustained cash flow. Well, that is pretty much what a lot of investors are looking for, isn't it? Developers, meaning drug companies and other such. So let's put that in plain English. Do not develop treatments that actually cure diseases such as cancer. Keep it a chronic disease so customers keep coming back for more. Big bucks for big pharma. So this was sort of the little tip off, because otherwise it would sound like a crazy conspiracy theory, right? That Wall Street was plotting or advising drug developers not to develop cures. This is the closest I've seen to an admission that, that this nightmare scenario is actually true. Namely, there's more money if you just keep the customer as a customer. And by the way, I heard an alternative doctor a long time ago tell me exactly the same thing when they said that he wasn't curing his patients. He said, you're right, I'm not. I'm keeping them alive, because then every month they have to come back to me for more treatment. So it's not just big pharma even little pharma thinks along these lines. Now we're getting into some of the things I wrote about in Cancer Incorporated. If you look back at the history, I'm big on history, look back at the history of conventional cancer cures, not talking about Laetrol and all the things that preceded and followed in terms of, the alternative world claiming to have cures. But let's look at standard oncology.
Ralph, pardon the interruption. I'm not sure if it's your coffee cup or something else that might be hitting your wire, but it probably doesn't sound loud to you, but on our end, yeah, if that sounds better. I just think there's a little bit of a clicking that was.
Yeah, that's my coffee cup. I apologize. Okay.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for telling me. Sure. So what I, looking back, I lived through all of these treatments, all the highs and lows. I went to the ASCO meeting for years and decades. I would go to American Society of Clinical Oncology, join the 25,000 oncologists who would come to those meetings, and it was always something that was being pushed that was the cure du jour, as a lot of people call it. And it really began, I would say, with the alternative world. But if we go back, really, I'll tell you where it all really all began, the urge to find the magic bullet and all that. It began in December of 1971, because that was the month and the year that the government endorsed the war on cancer. The National Cancer Act was passed and signed by Richard Nixon, December 23rd, 1971. And at that time, somebody high up in the government said, we're going to cure cancer in time for the bicentennial. So the bicentennial, as you remember, was July 4th, 1976. So they gave themselves less than 5 years to find the cure for cancer. Then that became modified to a cure for a major form of cancer. So, you know, it was really the government that more than any, you know, bad player in the private sector who started this idea that the cure was at hand. So if the government's telling you that the cure is at hand, you know, why not start your own cure? Why wouldn't a drug company come up with some treatment that they then would tout as the cure? And as the bicentennial came closer and closer, and nothing was improving, and there was even not even a credible strategy that you could point to for how we were going to get to that place, some crazy things happened. It started with interferon alpha. Interferon and interleukin are natural substances that are found either in the human body or they're actually produced by tumors and so forth. And they have validity. And they even have some validity in terms of treatment, but the way they were given, the concentration of them was crazy. I mean, it was huge amounts of these things. And even a natural substance that's given in excess is going to cause side effects. And the side effects with some of these things were horrendous. But all of them were touted in their day as the cure du jour, as I call it. Interleukin-2, I remember an oncologist telling me that he would never give interleukin-2 because it would peel the paint from the walls. And I thought that was a very graphic description. But, you know, you just have to look up the topic of vascular leak syndrome or capillary leak syndrome, and you'll see what was happening to a lot of people at that time who had that side effect caused by interleukin-2. So even though there were some remissions of cancer with interleukin-2, especially in kidney cancer, where it's still an approved drug, by the way, but by and large, these things had to be abandoned because of their toxicity. Same thing with tumor necrosis factor, which was discovered at Sloan Kettering while I was there. And I did get to write the first article for the lay public on TNF, and a tremendously important topic in science. I once attended a scientific meeting in Trondheim, Norway, and there were over 1,000 researchers there just on TNF. So it's an enormously important topic, but it fizzled as a treatment. And the main reason was it was just impossibly toxic. And then angiostatin and endostatin, these were the brain children of the great Judah Folkman at Harvard Medical School. And it was a very, very important development in science, but it also fizzled as a treatment. And this was touted on the front page of the New York Times as a potential cure within like 2 or 3 years. Of course, it never happened. The worst of these, and I talk about all of these, by the way, in Cancer Incorporated, but the worst of them was the high-dose chemo with bone marrow transplantation, then later became stem cell transportation. And I'm getting a message that I should join room one. Should I do that? Oh, I don't know what that was about.
No, I don't think that's for you. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Thank you. However, while we have you, I don't think it was your coffee cup. I think that on the right side of your headphones, there's a microphone that sometimes rubs up against your shirt or zipper.
All right. Let me undo this then. Hold on.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm always happy to oblige. Here we go. Let's see if we can. Maybe I'll do it that way.
Thanks, Ralph. Yeah, as long as it doesn't rub too much, it should be okay.
Right. Okay. Good. And this was horrendous side effects, a $1 billion business in the 80s and the 90s. And the reason I have this attractive young lady here is that it actually turned out to be a fraud. It was based on a fraud. The fraud happened in South Africa. Somebody claimed to have a fantastic cure rate in stage 4 breast cancer, when in fact, the person had manufactured the data. But the scandal was that American oncologists had grabbed onto this guy's data without examining it. They trusted him, or they just believed so much in the effectiveness of high dose chemo with bone marrow transplants for stage 4 breast cancer. They wanted to believe, and they believed, and then they gave this guy a free pass. In fact, they gave him the most coveted speaking position at the ASCO meeting, which is the plenary session. He got to address the entire 25,000 oncologists, which is an incredible experience, by the way. I mean, you've never seen rooms this large with gigantic monitors and everything. So it's, and he got the first spot in that, and it turned out the whole thing was a fraud. So I say oncology as a business led to massive fraud and massive deception of the public, and pumping up this idea of the magic bullet or the silver bullet, as the impending cure that never happened.